song is written and dedicated for G.G. Allin.
Smoking now, I'm stealing cars.
Boss!
Fight, boss.
Everybody, welcome to the Rogue Show. Sorry, it took me a minute to get ready. Just getting a few things tidied up. First and foremost, like always, I want to give a big shout out to all the great sponsors who make this show possible. This madness that is the Rogue Show going on its, what, almost third year. Our main sponsor who pays all the bills here in a big way, man, Clock Tower Pub, number one sports bar in all of Oregon. These guys are killer, throwing it down, live MMA, sports, TVs, cold beers, the works. Also, MMAMadhouse.com for letting us steal their studio every weekend. Vision Smoke Shop and Glass Distribution, anybody who follows me knows those people are huge supporters of local MMA, local MMA events, and us as well at MMAMadhouse.com. Also, the best mouth guards in the business, Clinch Custom Mouth Guards. You guys find them, join the Clinch Army, getclinched.com. Greg down at Ink Tank Tattoo for all the work he does for me. I love him. The guy's amazing. You guys check him out, Ink Tank Tattoo on Facebook. Jax Media, guys. Jax Media Canada on Twitter, jaxmedia.ca. They're huge supporters of Madhouse and some of the shows they have on their network, including Sunday Night Fights Live with Ray Lopez. They do amazing work from fighter bios to custom websites. GFL, you guys know we love them, we rock them, we support them. One of the best live streaming service, pay-per-view services for local MMA out there at GFL.tv. Also, Revolver MMA, big shout out to Javi and the boys. And then my favorite, RearNakedSmoke.net. You guys check them out. It's home of the Madhouse Global Combat Network. Thousands and thousands of fights on demand in the archives. Actually, there's a live judo stream day 6 of the Russian championships going on right now over there. Oh, some Muay Thai from, I can't remember which stadium. I forgot. I just posted it, though. I know. I can see I got the man himself, one of our great sponsors, great supporter of local MMA, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jeff from Clinch Custom Mouthguards. How you doing tonight, brother?
I'm good. I'm a myth.
Mm-hmm. You are. Hey, I got somebody else. Let's see who we got. 702, welcome to the Rogue Show. Who do we got?
Matt McGovern from World Fighting Championships.
Hey, Matt, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good. Just putting together some fight cards. We got 6 more shows this year.
Now, for everybody out there who might be living under a rock, you're an organization that doesn't stay still. You guys are doing multiple combat sports events in multiple states year-round. You guys keep expanding. So what all states have you held events in 2014?
California, Oregon, Louisiana, and a lot in Nevada.
So we do shows
in Reno. Go ahead.
No, finish.
We do shows in Reno, Tahoe, Laughlin, Las Vegas, Lincoln City, Oregon, Southern California, and then Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Now, so you guys are pro-am cards predominantly, correct?
Yes. We do. It just depends on the market. Some markets are all amateur. Nevada's really, really expensive to do pro shows, so sometimes it doesn't make sense to do pro shows. But mostly pro-ams everywhere we go.
And you guys are definitely giving MMA fighters as well as kickboxers, boxers, Muay Thai practitioners, all opportunities.
Yeah, it just depends on the market. Some markets are better for boxing. Some like Reno, we have a show September 28th, and there's a real strong Muay Thai community there. So we added Muay Thai this year, and it's been absolutely rock star for us between the level of fights and the support that we've gotten from the fans in the local market in the Bay Area to come over and watch. So that's something we just kind of tapped into.
Now, I know you're a busy guy, and obviously, you know, running so many different facets of your promotions in different states. There is a really successful young amateur tournament going on called SIAM, put on by SIAM Fight Productions. When you hear about leagues like that this is a legitimate amateur league. It's mostly 9-year-olds to 17-year-olds. But does that pique your interest when you hear a U.S. league building the young talent that you could eventually showcase on your platform?
Yes, it's the evolution of the sport, and especially mixed martial arts in the world, especially in the U.S., because the other sports, baseball, football, basketball, they get these athletes have been training their whole lives for the sports, and we haven't even seen that yet from mixed martial arts, and that's what's going to happen eventually, is these LeBron James and Kobe Bryant's and Dwight Howard's are going to want to be mixed martial artists or boxers or Muay Thai fighters with the exposure of the sport when they're 17 to 30, and this sport's going to be completely different. And we've got a taste of it with John Jones, but that level of athlete is going to be there's going to be a lot of athletes just like John Jones in the sport in probably 10 years.
Okay, now, for fans out there, including myself, let's jump back real quick because I want to get to some questions, but what's your background? How did you fall into the combat sports world and then become a promoter in that world?
Well, first, in first stake, I was a fan first, and a fan and a business person. I worked for the NBA selling sponsorships for them, and then I started selling sponsorships for pro boxing promotion. I went to an event with this pro boxing promotion. They had 7,000 fans, but they didn't have any sponsors. and I had been selling sponsorships in the market for a long time, and I told him, hey, you should have had about $50,000 in sponsors for this event. It was the biggest event this city's ever seen. And they said, well, do you think you could do better? And I said, yes, I think so. And so I started working for them, and then I started selling casino deals for the boxing promotion. I introduced MMA to them because I had asked them if we could do MMA because I was a big fan. And one thing led to another. I picked up my own fight series. Harris Corporation asked me to put together fight series for them. So it just quickly steamrolled, and I have a really good reputation. I put together good deal structures for the casinos. So fortunately, it's just snowballed, and now we're in, I don't know, eight or nine markets, and we probably could be in 12 to 15 if we really wanted to. But that's kind of where I'm at. But I started as a fan first, and then I've developed, and now I probably have matched 400 to 500 fights in my short career.
So with today's fighters, you touched on, you know, the athletes coming into the sport today. We're slowly progressing away from a fighter first and an athlete second to an athlete first and a fighter second. And with that transition, we're seeing a different level of social media interaction, a different level of sponsorship interaction, even a different level in the way they carry themselves in the public eye. Do you think, looking at the sport today, for your promotion, that somebody who addresses social media in a good, positive way is a bonus to get on your events?
Oh, yeah. You know, if you're not on social media, I'm probably not going to touch you just because I'm not going to connect with you. But we definitely filter through everybody's social media. If a fighter doesn't have a Facebook, that's like a, not that it's a bad thing, but it's just a surprising thing. We can't really get a gauge for their them as a person, them as a, like, you can't really get a feel of them as an athlete or past fights or the type of fan base that they have. So social media is a huge, huge part for them and for us. If I didn't have, I always tell people, if I didn't have Facebook, my business might be, would slow down dramatically, and I could definitely, like, we're going to do 17 fights this year, and I probably could do probably 7 if I didn't have social media.
So when you go after talent, and you're looking at, okay, I can hold events here, here, and here, this guy's got, you know, a base here where we're going to hold the event, but I also see as a fan base in California as well, maybe versus Oregon or Nevada. Is that, you know, is that then something you look at that maybe down the road matching him up in his hometown or back where he originally came from because of the amount of followers he has?
Yeah, that's what it's, I guess on my level, that's what it's about. Because we're working with regional casinos that pulse the region, so within 2 to 4 hours at the most. And we're trying to pull that region to that property, depending if we're in Reno, we're pulling from Sacramento, San Francisco, Baton Rouge, we're pulling from New Orleans, Lafayette, Oregon, we're pulling from Portland, Salem. So we're pulling people from the region. And so we're trying to find local draws in those areas. Not only that they're great fighters, but that they can draw locally, build a fan base, build a social media presence, and then get seen by the UFC, Bellator, World Series of Fighting. And that's kind of our method, and we've honed that in, and we've been able to deliver. I don't know how many shows we've done this year. We've done 11 shows this year, and we've probably sold out 7 or 8 of them. So we've done pretty well in that sense, and we're getting more and more exposure, more and more momentum, and we're pretty close to landing a small television deal. So that's what it's about. The national, like some new promotions come in, and they try to pull a bunch of big draws or former draws or ex-UFC guys, and they kind of go and lose a bunch of money off of the first event because the guys can't draw in those markets, but they have good exposure. But we've kind of honed that the hometown hero deal in.
Hey, you took the same route we did at, you know, me and Carl, my partner in the company of MMAMadhouse.com, we said, look, there, you know, I can't pull the numbers that Fox Sports 1 is going to pull to cover the UFC. I just can't. You know, that's the reality of the game. But what I can do is I can compete with every site out there who is Zuffa Zombie based by going to every regional market and getting 30,000 here, 20,000 here, 55 here, 7 here. Well, that all adds up. Now my numbers are as good as the big boys. You know, just because I didn't pull from one fan base and I pulled from 65 doesn't make a difference. And that's kind of what you guys did. You guys said, look, we don't need to play the whole, you know, dick measuring contest. I'm going to do local, and I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to be successful with it. And I like that attitude.
And it makes it, I was telling, we were having a boxing event August 16th in Baton Rouge, and I was telling one of the trainers, I said, this is a special event for everybody that's here because their brother or their best friend or their cousins fighting on this fight card, they're spending a good amount of money that to them on this event. They're dressing up for this event, and it's a big deal for them for this this weekend. It's not just, hey, it's another fight. Like, I go to a lot of fights in Las Vegas because I'm based here, and it's just kind of watered down because it's just another event. People are used to getting free tickets to the events, and it's not a special big night for them. But like in these smaller markets, this is a big deal. They're spending more money than they feel comfortable spending. They dress up. Like one of the guys I met in the casino I always play with, his wife was going to get her hair done, her eyebrows done, her getting a new dress, buying him a new shirt, and it was a big deal for them, and that's what makes it kind of special is because it's a big deal to them in that local region, and so it's a bit, it makes the event more special. And August 16th, we sold out 3 days beforehand, and then we just did standing room only until the fire marshal told us we couldn't fit any more people in the building, and the place just went off.
You know, it's, you know, you mentioned the fans getting behind the local shows. We've got fans in Berryville, Arkansas tonight sending us messages saying Chris McDaniels out of the Branson Fight Club who's fighting on your September 12th card, you know, people should be watching out for that cat. So, I mean, you know, this is an event in Baton Rouge, but you've got fans already in Arkansas who are all over this event. You know, that's
yeah,
a great thing.
We picked him up. He's fighting Kyle Bradley, former UFC guy. Local hometown hero, but Baton Rouge is head coach of the main gym there, so it's going to be a badass fight. It's, I think they both guys have over 20 wins, so it should be good.
Yeah. Now, rumors around say that you guys are coming back this year to Oregon before year's end. A, if that's true, where's the location? And B, have you already started working on a card, if it's true?
It was true. B, like right around, we were supposed to be coming back November 1st to Chinook Winds Casino, and there's like, I think five or six fights within the region within like a week or two between October 25th and the first couple of weeks in November. So I have six more fights this year, and the casino had the opportunity to pick up, I think, an important entertainer that they were they've been trying to get, and so they asked me if we could push it back to the first quarter of next year, and I didn't have any problem with it because we already have two fights in November and one in and two in October, so it made sense to push it back. But yeah, we will be coming back to Oregon. It's probably going to be in January, February. But we had some big names lined up for that card, so I'm a little disappointed. But it's better to it's better to hit a double than strike out.
Yep, and folks, so there's your answer to that question. You know, talking about, you know, all the, you know, the events that you hold, the traveling, the promoting, finding the regional amateurs and stuff, I'd like, you know, to kind of pick your brain. Is this something that you ultimately look at the rosters, or do you have a team that does it and hands you a selection and says, look, this is what we think are the best matchups? Or how deep is your finger in the talent pool and the matchmaking?
I'm balls deep, if that's politically correct, in the matchmaking. I was just talking to my wife about this matchup, the guy in New Orleans, right before I got on the phone. But, yeah, I probably match 90% of them, or I have at least my hand in it. I've got regional managers in each region that I try to find and establish to the day-to-day work with the coaches. And some of these guys already have established relationships and some of them don't, but the matchmaking is the lifeblood of the success of the organization, and so I have to watch it closely. And I took a little bit of a step back from it to try to delegate a little bit of the work because the workload's so big. It's a lot of conversations, and most of the work is between 6 p.m. and 12 at night, so it's a little difficult for family life, but it's my job, so I'm definitely involved with all of the matchmaking in every region, and it's important, and it pays off, and it's sweet when it pays off when you have a big event and a lot of people and good fights, and that's when it really pays off, but it's a little painful in the process.
Did you match Oregon?
Well,
who?
Sorry, Jeff,
Oregon,
go ahead.
Card?
What was the question?
I matched the Oregon card.
I was involved in it. I hired a local matchmaker, Nick Tunning, who owns a promotion out there in Vancouver, and we worked on it together. It was pretty. We had a pretty badass fight card. Fortunately, Chinook Winds gave us a decent budget for pros, and they want to do 8 pro fights. So we were able to pull some big pros in the area, and somewhere out there is sought after. So there's a few other pros that we were looking to pick up for the next fight. But we had Ian Loveland, Ryan Healy, Ian Kingshaw.
Did Ryan Healy. I thought after Ryan's performance with against Mike Ricci just weeks before that the George fight, you know, would have been just amazing. I know that fell through, so you guys brought in Hendricks. And I think we saw where Healy is today and that he should probably still be fighting on a larger market, an event. He really, mm-hmm. he just kind of controlled that fight from beginning to end, I felt. I will say that the Folsom fight, fans got their money right there. That was a great fight. And so was the Snodgrass fight. I thought those two fights were super exciting, very explosive. Personally, I was heartbroken because DJ's a really good friend of mine, somebody that Madhouse has sponsored and supported for years. It was great to hang out with him before the event. It was sad to see him lose just because I love the guy like a brother. He's such a good guy. But you did. You pulled some big names. You had some, you know, great fights. I will say the one negative I heard about your whole event was the commentating on the stream. A lot of people felt like it was more lackadaisical, more goofiness. You know, does that make sense? It wasn't as technically as maybe fans wanted it to be, with a lot more information about maybe submissions and transitions and stuff. But you know how fans are, they're finicky. But, you know, that's probably the one thing I heard, that it was too, like, lackadaisical, too relaxed of an atmosphere on the commentating. Mm-hmm. But that's not you. I mean,
like,
you can't, you know.
Like, they didn't know what they were talking about, kind of. They're a fan,
yeah.
Like they're just a fan, you know?
Yeah, I'll take blame for the commentating. The Go Fight Live, we pulled that together because it was a big card, and we hadn't done the pay-per-view with Go Fight Live in the past. And we were a little, it was probably up to like a couple of hours before the event that we were actually going to go through with the pay-per-view, because it was an outdoor event on the coast, and the internet at the casino was very, very weak just in general. And so we weren't sure if we were going to do a pay-per-view or not. And so we pulled together a commentating team. It was Nick Cunning and then Glenna Avila, who's a local pro fighter, to do the commentating play-by-play just hours before the event. So they probably weren't as prepared as we should have had them be, but some commentating is probably better than none.
Hey, much respect, Matt, for standing up and you know, you're the face of the company. I like that. That's very much respect from me to you. Yeah. I like that you could have easily blamed it on somebody else. You could have easily said, hey, this last minute, you know, we threw it together. It is what it is. You know, I didn't know what these guys, you know, hey, you manned up, man. Much respect to you. That's how somebody who loves and cares about their brand treats it. And I much respect.
Yeah, no problem. That is what it is. It's, we try to present ourselves in a professional manner, and some stuff is, you get spread thin and you don't deliver in some aspects, but it's a building process, and the live video production is going to get better and better, and it's one of our major focuses for 2015.
I know you mentioned.
I heard those.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Madhouse guys are pretty good. I heard those Madhouse guys are pretty good at that commentating at the fights.
Hey, I'm good on the radio. I'm not good commentating. Lepaki, man, he kills
it. Don't do his comments. He just comment nonstop. What are you talking about?
Now, hey, look, Matt, one of the things about this show is it's always been an open call-in show. You know, anybody wants to call in and talk MMA. And, you know, sometimes we ask the questions everybody's afraid to. Sometimes we ask the dumb questions. So I'm going to ask you a question from a promoter's point of view. With everything that went down today in the UFC, do you feel that it was at all acceptable to take a debuter and put him into a title fight?
You know, I'm pretty close into that situation, so I've seen it all the way through, and I've been in that position that the UFC was in for their fight to pull somebody last minute for their main event, and what you need to do to put the continue the show. Joe Soto, 15-2 Tashi Palos champion, Bellator tournament champion, solid wrestler. Is he on TJ Dillashaw's level? I'm not sure about that, but to put the event together, I'm gonna side with the promotion on that one. Henry Burrell's, if you watch those, what is it, the UFC, what do they do, those videos, what are they called, the inside of the training camp, what is it, have you guys been watching those ones?
Honestly, I kind of know what's going on with the UFC, but I'm not into it as much. I don't catch all the TV stuff, because like right now, I got live Muay Thai playing on one of the screens in the studio from Bangkok, you know, so that's where I spend my extra time, is watching Muay Thai from Thailand.
Anyways, they have these little, like, 24/7 inside of the fight camps, and they were inside in Burrell's fight camp, and the dude was significant. He was huge. He probably was 155 pounds, and one of his teammates is like, hey, when are you going to start cutting? He's like, oh, don't worry about it. And obviously, he didn't get below 138, but I think it was just probably an excuse. But just so, like, the level of card for a pay-per-view is really low, in my opinion. But to save the event, is he title-worthy? No, but what are you going to do? Are you going to have TJ Dillashaw fight for a non-title? What if he loses? <you're screwed.
laughs> That's a good point. So, my concern is, after watching Joe Soto fight Tyrion we saw him exposed in the stand-up game, exposed badly, and I think Dillashaw's just gonna eat, because Dillashaw's a much better striker than Therrien is right now. Therrien's still young in his career, you know. And I don't think he's going to be able to take Dillashaw down. I think Dillashaw's going to force it to stay up and finish it standing. I understand, especially hearing from you, I understand a promoter's point of view on all this. I also understand the fans' point of view and the media's point of view. I just, to me, like, I don't know. Right now, as it stood, Barao was not medically suspended for any amount of time. So to me, I'd just move the fight to next week in Connecticut. That's just me. I don't know if it's that easy to do, but, you know, that's what I would do if it's possible.
It's probably impossible. So what
okay.
do you do? You probably got $3 million invested in marketing the event for the pay-per-view. Your main event, which is TJ Dillashaw, who's the main draw in Sacramento, is still on the fight card. Hen and Browse would pull for pay-per-view, so they're going to lose all their international buys because he's a big draw in Brazil. But if you just moved it to next week, what are you going to do for Sacramento fans? So the whole event's just going to kind of get kiboshed.
Good point. So I like that point. You're right. You lose both flares. So maybe you call the California kid in to save the day.
He can't fight. He's got a broken rib. So I'm pretty – where we started was in Reno, Nevada, and I'm pretty tight with Ultimate Fitness, and we pull a lot of fighters over to Reno from their camps, and I am in constant contact. And when TJ had his pro debut, I had a fight the week before King of the Cage in Reno, and King of the Cage had called me to help them on their show. I was the first HDNet, which is now Access TV, show, and Mark Cuban and I can't think of the main producer's name, but they were flying out to Reno to watch the very first HDNet show, which is in Reno, and so King of the Cage called me to help them with the show, and I helped them sell like 300 tickets the week of the fight or something like that. They only had like 70 tickets sold for the first event, so they were really trying to scramble. And, well, long story short, TJ Dillashaw was on that fight card, and it was his pro debut, and I had seen I met all the Team Alpha Male at that fight, and long story short, he had come all the way to the championship fight, and the guys, Uriah Faber's assistant had texted me, hey, you want to come to TJ's championship fight for here in Las Vegas when he fought Hendon Brown. So I'd seen the thing come full fruition from pro debut all the way to world champion, so it was pretty sweet. And then now he's fighting in Sacramento, and this shit is going on, but I'm pretty tight with the guys from Joe Soto's camp, and Joe Soto was training in freaking Ultimate Fitness this week, getting ready for this fight, so it should be interesting.
Well, I don't blame Joe for taking the offer. Anybody who got that offer and didn't take it is dumb. Let's be honest. They're not trying to be a champion, you know, so...
Does he get Hendon Brown's paycheck? That was my question. Does he get Hendon Brown's paycheck? Because he's part of Idrinium Sports. They have a division up in the Northwest with Stephen Valentine. But that was their first fight with Joe Soto, and they got him into the UFC, and then he gets a fucking title shot. His first UFC fight, so that's pretty sweet.
That is. Speaking of sweetness, old friend, man, MMA Beatdown has joined us. How you doing tonight, brother?
What's up, man? Sorry I'm late. I was cutting weight.
Well, hey, we're kicking back with Matt. We started off talking about, Friday, September 12th down there in Baton Rouge. WFC 27, but we've so gotten off that, and we're just talking now. We're talking about, you know, the fight change for the title, and you know, DeSoto, you know. So welcome back. It's good to hear from you, brother.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. How lucky is DeSoto, huh?
Yeah, dude. I said it just right before you got on. Anybody who gets that offer, I don't care if you're an 0-5 or a 50-0 guy, they offer you a title shot, you take it. It can change your life. If you show up and you leave it there and it ends up being a split decision, you're a number one contender right then and there. So, Matt made a good point. Does he still get the same paycheck or does he get a bump in pay? And I'm hoping...
That would be nice.
I'm hoping that the management company, you know, took some kind of negotiations to the table.
Who'd be that fucking dumb?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right, Jeff. I mean, you know, they had to say, look, dude, we're not fighting for a title for no 8-8, motherfucker. You got to give us 25-25.
At least. Fuck that. Wait, 25.
When do you notice?
Yeah.
I think 25 and 25 is probably pretty good. I know TJ, I think he fought for 40 or 16 and 16 or something when he fought for something like that.
Skippy's speaking hundreds though. That's thousands, Skippy, not hundreds.
Look, I'll fight for 3-3 all day long, you know, just because I fight in strip clubs in the back room in this underground league. I don't know if you guys saw that, but El Huracan out of San Diego Combat Sports and Fitness, he posted that today. One of his fighters, he didn't say who, sent him a message. Hey, coach, I made $150 last night fighting in an underground strip club fight league. He's like, dude, not what you want to see from your fighters.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just so it's a win-win situation for him. And he can't – there's no way, like, unless he gets knocked out in the first round, we're going to be like, oh, let's fight the champion in the first fight. The UFC's not going to get out of it, man. Nobody's going to be like, oh, that dude sucks. He's just going to be in. But if he fights –
Hey, Matt, you're starting to break up on us.
Real bad.
Did we lose him?
I think he's gone.
I see. It says he's still live on the board. Well, beat down. Will we try to get him back? Are you going up to Baton Rouge?
Yeah, I'm going to check it out, man. That's going to be my first time ever going to one of his shows. I'm looking forward to it, man. It looks like a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, he's bringing in some guys from everywhere. Matt, if you can hear us, feel free to call back in. I got you connected. I don't know why we can't hear you, brother. If for any reason we can't get him back on, folks, WFC, World Fighting Championships Sports League, is on Facebook. You can find him on Twitter at WFC Fights. You guys get out there and check out these guys, man. They are supporting local MMA, legitimately supporting local MMA and combat sports in general in multiple states. Our boy Beatdown's going to be down there. We just recently went to one of his events. You're going to go to one of his events in your neck of the woods. You know, should be an exciting night of fights. Oh, cool. We got him back, it looks like. Hey, Matt.
Can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you now, brother.
All right, perfect. I don't know what happened.
Actually, Beatdown was just, we just asked Beatdown, he's going to be heading up to first time to one of your events, and that's where we just gave shout-outs for all your Facebook and Twitter and all that for you, just in case you didn't get back on. I know that Beatdown just said it looks like a really good card. He feels like it's a stacked card. Beatdown, are there some fights that you're looking forward to?
Well, I'd like to see Kyle Bradley. I think it's Sam, too, also, correct?
Who? Who?
Kyle Bradley's on your card, correct?
Yeah, Kyle Bradley's the main event, and then we have Fan Lee. He's an up and coming dude. He's like he's 3-1, but he's fighting a guy out of Las Vegas, Simmons, who's a guy with like 16 fights. And
yeah, Tran Lee was undefeated as an amateur, man. He did really well.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's explosive. He just knocked out a 6-0 dude, hometown hero, Justin Martin, on one of our friends' shows. So he's got a big fan base there, and he's a super athletic guy, exciting fighter, counterpuncher, all stand up. I'm excited about seeing him fight. Super, super easy and good to work with. And then we have two guys who were on the Ultimate Fighter, Christian Fulgham and James Chaney. They're fighting each other. James Chaney's out of Las Vegas or Portland area. I think he actually was from Oregon somewhere. And then Christian's the head coach down in Lafayette.
Oh, good. Looking forward to it for sure.
Now,
yeah.
I'm curious. You've gotten to go all over Nevada. Is there any reason why you never hit up Elko? Is it just because it's an odd location?
Elko's an Indian reservation for the most part. So,
oh, okay.
We've looked into it. I think Gladiator Challenge is out there. I don't really like going into places where, you know, there's only one casino in the area. It's the Indian reservation. It's really, really sketchy fights. They don't really have any sanctioning that goes out there. So the fighter safety and the professionalism comes first, but we've looked into it. We've looked even going over the border to Utah, which, like, there's like a close city. I can't remember the city off the top of my head right now.
Yeah.
You're saying, what's the city?
Go ahead, finish. Yeah, go ahead, finish.
There's a city that's real close there to Elko, and it's a big mining town, and then it's only like an hour outside of Salt Lake City. And I've looked into it, but it just didn't make sense when we looked into it and talked to the casinos in the area.
Well, you know, I like that, your mentality about, other people's backyards, looking at the reservations, the casinos, the regulating bodies. We just had Corey Schaefer, the president of ISK, on our Wednesday show last week. I'm pretty sure, you've had to deal with a lot of either state athletic commissions or third-party sanctioning bodies. Have you worked with ISKA in Nevada?
Yeah, I used to work with them in the past, and then the UFC works with a promotion, a sanctioning body called IMMAF, and they're U.S. divisions, UMMAF, and so they're the main sanctioning body for the whole world, and so the UFC uses IMMAF, and so we switched to their U.S. division, but we used to work with ISKA.
Well, now, is this the same? So your sanctioning body now, do they travel with you to, like, Utah or Louisiana or California? Or do you
No,
have
to, it just depends. Okay. Like, in Nevada, your license is promoter in the state of Nevada, which is pretty difficult to do. And then if you want to do amateur, they don't sanction amateur fights, but you have to be licensed. If they license them, but you have to be, you get sanctioned. So like the officials are under like the ISKA or UMMAF, and those officials like officiate the fights for amateur in Nevada. But in like in Oregon, we do it on a state in the Indian reservation, but in Oregon, the state of Oregon regulates those fights and sanctions those fights, so we're licensed by the state of Oregon. And then in Louisiana, we're sanctioned by the Louisiana State Athletic Commission. In California, we do the amateur fight, and so we were sanctioned by CAMO, which is the sanctioning body, which is similar to ISKA.
Okay.
So it just depends. Every place it's different, but people think it's super difficult, or it's a pain in the ass. It's just a process, and once you learn the process and what you need to do, and you come to terms on it, and what, and you know that you need to get your shit together to get this stuff done, it's pretty easy. It's not that difficult. It's just people make it harder than it really is.
Is, I gotta ask you, man, because I'm just that way, and sometimes I gotta ask the questions. Is there a sanctioning body you feel that's easier to work with than another one?
Everyone's a little bit different. Nevada is the most strict, and they have the most rules for medicals and those specifics. But every politically correct answer is they're all pretty easy to work with. But the real honest answer is they're all pretty easy to work with. Some of the outsourced sanctioning bodies, which aren't state run sanctioning bodies, aren't as easy to work with as others, because they're not doing it mostly for money. They're just doing it for like the power of being in charge, and so they make it a little bit more difficult. But every state's has been pretty easy to work with. We're pretty organized, and so we don't make their lives that difficult, so they're not super hard on us, but they can be. And they have their times that they can be, but for the most part, it's pretty easy.
Well, I'll tell
you. I've got a question for you, Matt.
Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you do amateur and pro boxing shows too, correct?
I only do pro boxing. Amateur boxing, you have to use, I think, like 16-ounce gloves and headgear, and I haven't gotten into it. I'm in the process of working on a deal here in Las Vegas to do a little bit of old-school glory days boxing, and we might implement USA boxing into that, but right now I just do pro boxing in Louisiana.
Why, are you trying to get your kid hooked up?
No, man.
Yeah, come on, man. Dude, don't let him lie to you. I know when he meets you, he's going to be like, look, he's going to slide you a promo video of his son's, like, 35 knockouts. He's going to be like, just let you know. I know how he is.
Well, come out to her. Oh, your wife, you said your wife had came out to our last boxing event, right? Or she came
wait,
out to our last
again?
MMA.
Yeah,
your
yeah.
Wife
came
out to our last boxing.
That's
or
right.
MMA?
She did. It was the box.
That was insane. I hope she had a good time. But there was, I think, like 3,000 people in a 1,500 person venue.
Yeah.
So.
She said it was a good matchups, man. She said some good back and forth fights too. So.
Yeah, I took over the matchmaking. I had delegated the matchmaking out, but I took it over for that last fight, and we pulled all pretty much locals except for one fight, and so it was special. Good fights, even matches. So we had opponents, you know, it's usually opponents against up-and-comers or, you know, big-time prospects, and I put opponents against opponents and prospects against prospects, so it makes the fights a little bit better that way.
Well, I took your advice, and I went and looked up that video that you told me about Lanny Dardar. I went and looked it up, man. That was a damn good fight. You were right on that.
Oh, yeah, they freaking blasted each other because Eric Johnson's Roy Jones Jr.'s like protege, and they had real big hopes for that guy, and he has a huge fan base, and he's really easy to work with and super athlete, and I had Lanny fight my main event for the last MMA before that, and he's got like 20. He beat Kyle Bradley. He's like 25-8 or something as a pro MMA fighter, and he works offshore, so he doesn't train that much. But he always brings in. I think he was like Golden Glove champion or something like that. And so he had gone to a draw with an 8-0 guy on his last boxing fight, and so I put him in there with Roy Jones' golden boy, and he knocked him down in the first round, and man, they freaking blasted each other. But I watched Eric Babyface Johnson versus Lanny Dardar. It was a 4-round boxing fight in Baton Rouge on our show on August 16th, and they just went back and forth. And unfortunately, there was a big fight in the crowd in the third to fourth round, and so it kind of took away from the end of that fight, but they definitely put on a show.
Now, we've talked about your cards. Obviously, you're building up. You know, we've touched on you going after local talent and building it up. I want to ask you another tough question, man, because, you know, this is the first time I ever got to get you on here. You've been really honest and open, and I've definitely enjoyed having you kicking back with us fucking knuckleheads tonight. What do you think about these can fights you're seeing with local and regional promotions putting up, like, this bullshit guys for title fights? Do you think that hurts them in the long run?
Yeah, it's like a sensitive thing for me. I've been a little too stingy with my titles. There's probably some divisions that no one's ever even gotten a title belt in on my fights, and I've done so many. So I'm probably on the other side of the spectrum. But it's just kind of lame when you got a guy who's 2-2 fighting for a title against a guy who's like 4-6. So I don't have a legitimate title fight. But it's a difficult deal. So we've had some title fights that the guys aren't, you know, the top level, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I think it's kind of lame when you just kind of throw title fights in there just to sell some more tickets or make somebody feel special, or if it's your fighter. So
I love it. I'm telling you what, Matt, you are making everybody tonight listening to this show a big fan of you.
It's just the truth. So,
but we look, this is why we started the show years ago. You know, we did it late night Friday because, you know, we figured there'd be people would be willing to come on in the late hour and be more honest. But, you know, I've done over 600 podcasts, okay? I get promoters all the time who give us the politically correct answer every single time. You know, they never, ever want to say anything that's considered or misconstrued in any way, shape, or, you know, form. And it's nice and refreshing to have somebody, you know, kicking back, you know, who's a major promoter across the United States who's not afraid to, you know, to call an apple, you know, to say that's a pig with lipstick and it's still a pig, you know? So I enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. And you probably go through some of my title fights. Some of them are pretty weak. And it's probably a UFC TJ Dillashaw versus Joe Soto situation where we had our main badass fight and the opponent fell out last minute and we had to replace it with somebody, and it might not be the best guy, but they're still in there to fight.
Yeah, well, you know, and look, I completely understand. I mean, you know, Jeff from Clinch Custom Mouth Guards, he's been a matchmaker for quite a few years on top of a state referee in the state of Washington, and then obviously owning his own mouth guard company. So, you know, I've known this cat. He's like a brother to me, honestly. I love him to death, and he's opened my eyes to a lot of what happens in the behind the scenes with matchmaking, you know, and sometimes even like the UFC, as much as, you know, people want to bitch and moan, this stuff happens in the sport. It's part of the sport. And I guess, you know, sometimes you're just dealt that hand. And like you said, do you just piss away $3 million or do you make it work?
Yeah. And they shouldn't. That's a legitimate fight. What is TJ Dillashaw is probably like 9-2, 10-2, and he's fighting a guy 15-2.
That's right.
They're both 15-2. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And
TJ's 16. That's right.
TJ got knocked out by that
Joe Warren
145er lefty on Who?
Oh, no. No, that was Soto that fought Warren and got knocked out. Never mind. I'm thinking of the wrong person.
No, yeah. So Joe Warren's pretty legit. TJ Dillashaw's. So they've both got a similar record. It's not like it ain't going to be just some laydown. If freaking Joe Soto can take him down, he'll grind him out for a long time and survive, but he's not going to be able to grind him out for 25 minutes.
Even that card, even the undercard, I mean, Tony Ferguson against Last Call, you know, that's going to be.
Tony Ferguson versus Danny Castillo? He's playing Danny Castillo.
Dude, the old Showdown Fights guy.
Danny Castillo fought in Showdown Fights?
Yeah, he fought down there a couple of times. I love some of his fights over there. I think he's an under... I think he doesn't get the respect he deserves as a fighter. I think that guy is a beast, dude. WEC days, I mean, you know, that's a great fight right there. I mean, tough kid.
I saw Tony Ferguson fight on the undercard of TJ Dillashaw versus Ronan Barrow, the first one, and he just destroyed this Asian dude that he was fighting. So he looked really good in that fight. Danny Castillo's at Ultimate Fitness, and he's fighting his hometown, but I don't know if he's as explosive as Tony Ferguson. But we'll see tomorrow night.
Well, you know, a fight, I'll be honest, I got a lot of love for EFC Africa, Matt. You know, it's an organization we've been following for quite a few years. I think right now they have the best 120, 135er in the world, and DeMarte the Wolf Pena, you know, defended his title 6 times, gave it up, and went to another weight class and is in the mix instantly after devastating victory. You know, they brought over Ruan Potts, and he's going to be fighting Anthony Hamilton, obviously the former MFC heavyweight champion who beat Shlomino Rama with that nasty head kick. And Shlomino's now fighting for the World Series of Fighting heavyweight title. So, I mean, this fight right here, to me, I know it's on the undercard. This is a fight with big boys that could be super exciting and could be just a knockdown, drag-out, bloody war.
Is that going to be on the Fight Pass, or is it going to be on
no,
Fox Sports?
That'll be on the Fox Sports. It'll, the Ruan Potts, Anthony Hamilton fights the second fight after the Chris Wade. And which is funny because Chris Wade just fought Frankie Perez and gave Frankie his first loss, and then we see Frankie go to World Series of Fighting and Chris Wade go back or go to the UFC. So it's just interesting how the regional fight scenes are starting to take off and where we're seeing the fighters who win versus the fighters who lose. Because obviously, look at Soto. If Tarion would have beat Soto, Tarion theoretically would have been the one who got the fight with Bershak, you know. So it's a weird little world, man. You got to watch the fights. You got to see, you know, because a loss can keep you from the UFC. I mean, it's just that simple.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And Joe Soto only fought for, like, I think 4 weeks ago or something like that for the Tachi Palace title. So
yeah,
he's not that fresh.
Yeah, no, he I think it was third round that he ended up choking out Tarion. So, you know, he had a fight on his hands, you know. It wasn't like
he was losing
a
freaking stand-up fight.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he was. And, you know, I know that he had the tough fight with Libiano at the February card for Tachi. You know, he ended up getting the TKO, but it was late in the fight. That was another. And don't forget, you know, he had an easy fight with Corey Vombar. You know, he choked that kid out pretty quick. But, you know, he's been active enough. He's obviously, I think what – somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he's on like a 7-fight win streak right now. So picking up a title at a well-respected organization along the way. So, you know, I understand, you know, once again, his ability to get in there. Plus, he's been in, you know, against, like we said, Joe Warren. You know, that was, you know, a tough test. I know it didn't go as long as anybody on his side wanted it to go. But, you know, Joe Warren's a tough, tough SOB.
So what's your predictions here, people?
Oh, easy. This is how I'm going to read it. Dillashaw, TKO, round one. Danny Castillo, decision. Shayna Baszler, submission, second round. Ramzi Najimji, or however you say that shit, he's out of the pit group out there in Salt Lake with Lehigh Dominguez, a fighter we sponsor. Yeah, I believe he's going to get a victory. I believe he's going to walk away with a decision in a dirty, long fought. I think Damon Jackson takes Yancy Madero out in the middle of round two with a TKO. I think Derek Brunson is going to TKO Lorenzo Larkin in the third. I think Hamilton and Ruan Potts goes to a split decision, and I think Chris Wade kills Kane. I know this kid, Curry Azaso, is supposed to be a really big talent, but anybody who saw that fight with Frankie Perez, hey, Frankie Perez was 17-0 coming into that fight, one of the most hyped 145ers in the country. And I tell you what, Chris Wade and him put on one hell of a fight, so I don't see this kid coming in and taking Chris Wade out. Now that he's got a taste.
Well, I only have two predictions. Tony Ferguson, second round TKO. TJ Dillashaw, second round TKO.
Ah, so you think Soto's going to take it to the ground in the first a little bit and draw out the fight?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll try to the first round.
Try to push the cardio and see where Dillashaw's at, see if he can get him gassed by wrestling him out in the first round. Smart, you know.
I don't know if he'll be able to get him gassed, but I think he'll be able to survive. He's got enough fights.
Oh, yeah. How about you, Beatdown? You got any picks for the card?
I'll go with TJ in the second. Tony in the second. Coria, I don't know. I think she's going to go the distance with her and go decisions, man.
Oh, I think she sums out Baszler. I think she stands up, throws the four horsemen sign, and pulls down two, just like Amanda Bell did.
She knocked that freaking girl out, man. That was a big-ass win.
We've been sponsoring Amanda since she was an amateur. And no shit, Matt, standing not a foot from my head right now is her first Invicta contract framed and hanging in the studio. We love Amanda Bell, and everybody was like, oh, this is just a tune-up fight for her to go to the Invicta or to the UFC. Well, Amanda Bell put a big squash on that shit.
Oh, she's not out, though. She's got too much beef behind her, and she'll probably fight Amanda again, too. But, yeah, they had, like, huge hopes for freaking that girl, so I'm happy that Amanda got that win. I was pretty pumped about it, but because I was going to try to put Amanda on probably, I don't even know, probably two or three years ago off against Veronica Rosenhauser they were both amateurs in Reno.
Wow.
but I think the last second Veronica fell out or something.
And that's,
I can't remember what happened.
And that's when Amanda, that's right after Amanda had beaten Jessamyn Dukes.
She was, 6-1 as an amateur. So that's what we were going to try to make it happen. But so I don't know what happened. But then I was trying to make it for that Oregon card. So.
Oh, wow. That would have been great.
It was either that or there's like somebody from what's the jiu-jitsu, Impact Jiu-Jitsu. She's like she was 3-1 as an amateur, 155er, and it was agreed on, Leanne something, can't remember that, and it was versus Veronica Rosenhauser. Veronica had a 5-second knockout on my card, and she fought on Tough Enough. She got another 5-second knockout, and then so the buzz on her was super huge going into Invicta, and she's done really well. And she, all that Invicta didn't have a fight for like 8 months or something like that, so she was getting her contract was up, And then right when we were going to put the thing in the contract, Invictus announced that they were going to be on Fight Pass, and then Veronica Raffelhauser's managed by Uriah Faber's management company, and so she didn't. She wanted to wait and see what Invicta had to offer with the Fight Pass, so that's why it didn't happen. But it would be a sweet fight, Veronica versus Amanda Bell. But it was cool to see her get that win.
Well, I believe Veronica now faces Charmaine Not So Sweet Tweet, who just February, I believe, beat Amanda Bell at Battle for the Borders 2 up in Canada. So that would be kind of nice to see those two girls face, if, you know, because assuming that Charmaine wins, and I believe talking to Cord recently and hearing about her fight camp, and obviously everybody saw the 6 or 7 girl fight camp that she pulled together, bringing in female fighters from all over the world to get ready for this. I think Charmaine's got something to prove. I just hope she doesn't lay an egg like she did last time. It was a very boring, uneventful fight.
She's not going to beat Veronica Raffelhauser. That girl's got, she's like a college softball player. She's just got nasty hands, and she's like a big athlete. But one thing about her, she moved up to Oregon, so I don't know if she's in any training camp or not. So she was from Reno, and so I was pretty tight with her. When I first met her, she was a fit 180-pound girl. So for her to cut down to 155 is a pretty difficult deal, because she's just a big girl. She's like 6'1", 6 foot, and she's just big, like big boned. So, but she's got nasty hands. She's knocked out some good girls. So we'll see. That Charmaine had like tweeted us when we were looking for somebody from Veronica. So she really wanted that fight. So, and Charmaine's pretty tall, right, too?
Yeah, Charmaine is, I think she's 6'1", or 6 foot. She's right at 6'6", 6'1".
That's going to be a good fight. When are they fighting?
They're fighting on the September 6th at Invicta 8. So next weekend. Now, just for everyone out there knows, Charmaine won most of her Muay Thai world titles at 155 or higher. So she's used to being up at that weight class. You know, cutting to 145 has been only for MMA. You know, she traditionally fought at
155, right?
Yes. So she said the other night in the interview that she was walking it, like, you know, we talked to her Thursday, so last night, she was sitting at like 163 last night, you know, so she's right on point for her weight cut, assuming Veronica
did
obviously is as well.
Did you ask her
weight? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we have fighters
on her weight.
Oh, we ask fighters all the time. Hey, one of my favorite questions to ask female fighters, and Lepaki's good at this, we ask them about, you know, going out public with the cynic and others with black eyes. And a girl that we used to sponsor and we love to death out of Canada, who's had to step down, she got an Invicta contract and she had to step away from it due to they found out she had some genetic disease in her hip or something. But we were talking to her and she was getting ready to get married. This girl had a black eye, and the ladies at the wedding place were trying to convince her that they could help her sneak away from an abusive husband. She had to show them video of her, you know. Yeah. Some of the stories we've heard have been great. Like, guys and girls who go out who are fighter couples, you know, purposely starting stuff in public, making it, you know, like, oh, I'm sorry, I put too much pepper in the macaroni and cheese last night, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't need any of those stories.
Yeah, enough. We got enough with War Machine and his crazy ass.
Oh gosh, yeah. My old graphic designer is really good. Her name's Melissa, and she got hired by Bellator to do their graphic design. And she's got this big. She was doing some MMA training or something like that. Really pretty girl, and she has this huge bruise on her hip that she posted on Facebook, and I just wrote War Machine ? She's like, too soon. Like, she works at fucking Bellator, but too soon, but yeah, she's got the nasty bruise. But
man, did you see the picture with Kung Lee after the fight, and somebody posted on there, looked like he cheated on War Machine.
Oh, that's so rough, man. Man. Well, you know, guys, it's we've been rocking like an hour. Matt, man, you got any shout-outs, man? Anything you want to say to the fans? Any sponsors you want to thank? Anybody, fighters looking to fight for you where they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, we have worldfightingchampionships.com is our website, or WFCfights.com. You can register there. Give a shout-out to you guys. Thanks for the support. We keep pushing our fights, and we're going to expand. We've got good sponsors in all of our areas, but we've got some big fights coming up. I think I'll just announce the six fights that we have. September 12th in Baton Rouge MMA, Pro MMA, and Amateur MMA. September 27th in Reno during Street Vibrations, Muay Thai, and MMA. October 12th in Las Vegas. It's a Sunday. We'll be out there, MMA. And at the downtown Las Vegas Event Center, sponsored by the D. And October 17th, back in Baton Rouge for professional boxing. November 22nd, in Baton Rouge again for professional MMA and amateur MMA. And then we end the year in Reno, Nevada, Muay Thai and MMA. But we've got good casino partners, and next year should be pretty special. But we appreciate you guys having us on.
Hey, yeah, and whoever does your press releases, man, let's. I'd love to get one for like every event. That way, you know, we can share it because, you know, off of Madhouse, obviously, we can share it with all the other websites we own and all the social media sites that we're part of around the world. You know, so I know you guys send them, and we get a few here and there. I would love to just get, like, if we could get one for, like, every event, man, because you guys got a lot going on, and I'd really like to be able to help, you know, promote all your events, not just the MMA. You know, we're a full combat sports company, so, you know, boxing, Muay Thai, any of that, man, we're there to help you.
Thank you so much, yeah. We got to get you on. I sent an email to our marketing guy to get you on all of our lists, but sometimes those little things don't resonate. So, yeah, if you don't get anything in the next couple of weeks, just hit me with text or Facebook message, and we'll get you set up. I appreciate it.
Hey, brother, we appreciate, man, you taking the time, coming on, kicking back for the fans around the world tonight, and your open honesty. You know, I love it, man. You know, we wish you the best of luck. I know Beatdown's going to be down, so we'll get to hear the reviews from him the following Rogue Show after that. So, hey, Matt, I appreciate it. Beatdown, you want to get some shout-outs too?
Man, that's it. I mean, I appreciate Matt coming on the show, man. It was great having him. I'm looking forward to the show. I really don't have nothing going on this weekend. But, hey, man, congratulations to Ben Askren for winning the 1FC champion.
Hell, yeah. Hey, big shout-out to Roger. Worth getting back in the cage and grabbing a victory as well. That guy, just a beast. Jeff, Clinch Cuts the Mouth Guards. I know your rundown, so I'll do it for you. Everybody get clinched. Join the army at getclinched.com. Number one, custom mouth guards in the business for the best price, the best protection. You guys know how we end every show. Eagle!
Now, I have to warn you, some of this footage that you're about to see is clearly inappropriate for young viewers. Please ask your children to leave the room. And I'm serious. You really don't want your kids watching this.
Here we go. Another day, another strike. Here we go. It's the living sacrifice. Here we go. I get your bullshit word. Here we go.